सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Bringing Ishvara into our lives so last night we were discussing the nature of Ishvara or the nature of God. How the very word Ishvara reveals what Ishvara is. Where Ishvara is derived, the root Ish, to which the suffix Varach is applied. Ish means to rule. Ishvara means one whose nature it is to rule. What is meant by nature is, when one does not want to make any effort, is his nature the rule. By nature is ruler. So we discussed what kind of ruler Ishvara must be. A ruler must be one, Ishvara must be, who is not ruled himself by anything else. Who is not ruled by someone outside of himself. There is no other Ishvara to rule this Ishvara. Nor is Ishvara ruled by something within himself. Because there are rulers who are absolute rulers, but they are also ruled by their inner passions, their inner impulses, such as greed, anger, etc. Ishvara has to be a ruler who is not ruled by anything outside of himself, nor within himself. Meaning that he is free from all passions, such as greed, such as anger, such as jealousy. No passion can be there. You cannot provoke him. See, when we have within ourselves greed or anger, somebody can push the button and provoke those impulses. We have lots of buttons. All you need to do is to say something and I get provoked, I get angry. Show me something, I get tempted. So that is our lot. But Ishvara cannot be provoked. He cannot get angry. He cannot be tempted. He cannot be influenced. It's important because some people present Ishvara as an angry God. He'll get angry. If you don't do things in this way, God will get angry, he'll punish you. How can they be punishing God? Bhagavad Gita says, Lord Krishna says, Pitahamasya jagatah Mata Dhata Pitamaha. I am the father of this universe. I am the mother. I am the grandfather. So one who is father and mother and grandfather, do not expect him to be getting angry at the children. So we do not expect our God to get ever angry. They will punish me. A father would not punish the son or child. So this is very important. Ishvara is free from all buttons. Why is it so? Because He has nothing to lose, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. He is complete in nature. Purnameva avashishyate. What is Purnam, whole and complete. Ishvara means the one who is whole and complete, limitless, ananda, in which there is no lack, there is no want. If there is a lack or a want, then you can provoke me, you can push buttons, you can tempt me. Thus, Ishvara is the one who always abides in wholeness, completeness, ananda, happiness, love. And he alone is fit to rule, who is free from these passions. Then only he can be impartial. He can be just. He can be fair. He has no axe to grind, no agenda of his own. And therefore, he won't be partial to somebody or cruel to somebody. An agenda. Then, whoever fulfills my agenda, I become partial to that person. Whoever becomes an obstacle to fulfilling my agenda, I become angry at him, become cruel to that. So if we observe our own vyavahara, our own interactions with the world, sometimes we are partial, sometimes we are cruel. Because we have attachment and aversion, raga and dvesha. This is discussed in the Brahma Sutras. That is Ishvara partial? Is he cruel? Says no. Although it looks as though some people, there is suffering in this world. Is it because Ishvara is cruel? Is he punishing some people? Is that why there is pain and suffering in the world? Answer is no. Whatever it is that we are experiencing is the result of our own karma, what we have done. And therefore, if there is pain in my life, it is due to the result of my own karma. There is pleasure in my life, also the result of my own karma. Then what is Ishvara's role in that? Is he just a mechanical fellow who simply gives out to you the result of your action? He is called karma phala data. Data means giver. Karma phala, fruits of the action, the results of the action. He is the giver of the results of the action. What kind of a giver? He's just like a judge who simply passes on the judgment, punishes the guilty and rewards the virtuous. So now, Ishvara is kind of benevolent. You see, Ishvara is kripalu. He is compassionate. He is benevolent. Meaning that, even when he appears to be giving pain in our life, that pain also is not meant as a punishment, is meant as something to help me grow. You see, very often we have seen mother administering the medicine to the child, particularly when it is Ayurvedic medicine, which is always bitter. And mother has to administer that medicine to the child because child is sick. No child wants bitter medicine. So when the child sees the mother approaching the medicine cabinet, then child knows that mother is going to reaching out for medicine. He quietly, runs away from there. Do you think that mother is going to leave him? No. Mother chases and catches hold of him. It looks very cruel. If the child does not cooperate, She holds both her hands, puts her in the lap, doesn't open the mouth, presses the nose, mouth opens, and that spoon of the bitter medicine is pushed into the mouth. So cruel. A child in America would say, "Mom, I hate you, you are cruel." Even at the cost of being hated, being called cruel, mother will do this anyway. So administering the bitter medicine also is ultimately for the well-being of the child. You would expect a mother or father only to do that which is in the best interest of the child. The child may or may not think so, because the child is immature, doesn't know what is good for him, what is right for him. He wants what is pleasant and wants to avoid what is unpleasant. But sometimes what is unpleasant is good for us. What is pleasant may not be good for us. And therefore, a good mother will not simply give to the child what is pleasant all the time. You give the child what is good for the child. Sometimes parents think that we love our child by just giving them whatever they want. In that process, we spoil the children. We make them incapable of facing unpleasant situations. Make them incapable of facing any pain, and the life is going to bring them pain and unpleasantness. So parents' role is not to keep on giving what the child wants. Parents' role is to give the child what is best for the child, whether the child likes it or not. Thus in our life also, we are confronted with anything that we may not like. It is true. Ishvara is the karma phaladata, meaning he is the dispenser of the results of our actions. There is no doubt that what we get or what we confront is the result of our past action. No doubt about that. Because then only there can be fairness. I cannot be struck with the result of what somebody else has done. And somebody else cannot be struck with what I have done. That would be unfair. Is it not so? There will not be fairness. There will not be order. Disorder. In order for there to be an order in the universe, there must be justice. There must be fairness. And therefore, I must be rewarded for all the good that I have done, and I may have to be reprimanded for whatever violations are done. Therefore, Ishvara's role is two ways. Again, a good parent's role involves both nigraha and anugraha. Nigraha, restraining. Anugraha, giving freedom. Like a charioteer who drives the horses, drives the chariot. You see the chariot sometimes giving freedom to the horses. The rein is loose and the horse has freedom to run as they want. But when the chariot finds that they are running too fast, then it restrains them. If they are going in the wrong way, because sometimes the horses get tempted. Looking at the grass in the ground, they are tempted. Again, yes, to restrain them and put them on the right path. So just as it is the role of a charioteer to sometimes restrain the horses, when you find that they are deviating from the path, or to give them freedom to run, when you find that they are going along the right path, Similarly also, even parents also should do that. You have to restrain the child. When you feel that the child is violating the boundaries, we should hurt the child. And giving freedom to the child, when you find that the child is doing the right thing. So also in our life, Ishvara is the karma phaladata, the dispenser of the results of the action. Sometimes we find that we are given freedom. Sometimes we find we are restrained. We do not like when we are restrained. We do not like when our freedom is denied. We may complain. We may start even accusing Ishvara of being unjust, etc. But no. So he is the right kind of ruler. So every ruler must have nigraha and anugraha. We have to restrain those who are deviating from the path of righteousness. They must be restrained. And rewarding those who are on the path of righteousness. Righteousness is dharma. So those who are on the following dharma, those who are in sanmarga, those are on the right, righteous path, they should be encouraged, they should be rewarded. And those who are deviating from the righteousness should be restrained. That's what we find in the universe also, that sometimes we are restrained, sometimes we are encouraged. Thus, if you understand the role of Ishvara, then this is important to understand. Otherwise, when things do not go the way we want, we start blaming Ishvara. Sometimes people fight with Ishvara. They curse him. They blame him. This one person, he was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, performing puja every day for years and years. And unfortunately, his young daughter met with an accident. She died. This person was so upset. He takes his Lord Krishna and throws him out. So I have been worshipping you since last 25 years. What have you done for me? So sometimes we get shaken up. Because we can't understand why things are happening. You know, sometimes there is no explanation as to why painful things happen. No explanation. That is when the Shraddha comes in. Shraddha means a trust in Ishvara comes in. Ishvara is benevolent. He never punishes. Whatever he does is meant for our well-being. It may be blessing in disguise. In what way, I do not know. Very often we do not understand what is happening in our life. And mainly we have a problem when some painful things happen. Nobody seeks any explanation when something pleasant happens. Nobody says, why me? Why should I win lottery? Why me? That nobody asks. Why should I get a job? Why me? No. Why should I pass the test? Why me? That time we never ask this question, why me? When good things happen to us, I assume that it should happen. When something painful happens, then I ask the question, why me? Because we have agenda for Ishvara as to what he should do and what he should not do. But Ishvara has an agenda for us. What is the agenda? That we should grow. Life is meant to grow. Our Swami asked this question. What is called life? Is living called life? What is living? Is breathing called living? We breathe even when we are asleep. We breathe even when we are in coma. But can you say that you are living? No. Living means interacting with the world. That is called life, when we interact. Not just interact. But in what way? What's the purpose of human life? What is the purpose of the human life? Human being has been given what we call the free will. A freedom of choice has been given to us. See, Ishvara is a great giver. He's called Data, great giver. Our Swami always makes it a point that this beautiful body, human body, is given. I have not created it. Although you can say that my parents have given birth, my mother has given birth to the body. But has she created the body? Does she know the anatomy of this body? Does she know how the body comes? She doesn't know anything. She is merely an instrument in bringing forth this body to the world, is it not so? In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, I am the father. Mama yonir mahat brahma tasmin garbham dadamyaham sambhavasara bhutanam tato bhavati bharata. He Bharata, he Arjuna, my maya is the yoni in which I impregnate. That's how the whole universe is born. Sarva yoni shukanteya muteha sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahat yonihi aham bija pradaspita. Sarva yonishu he kaunteya he Arjuna, sarva yonishu, in all the yonis and all the species, yaha murtaya sambhavanti, whatever forms are born, not only human beings but all living beings, whatever forms or whatever names and forms are born, tasam brahma mahat yonihi, of them my maya is the mother. Aham bija pradaspita, and I am the father. Lord Krishna says. So he is the real father and Maya is the real mother. The local parents are the instruments in the hands of the Lord. Therefore, who has brought forth this body? It is Ishvara who has brought forth this body. Is it not so? So he is the giver of this body. This body is given. We have five organs of perception. We can hear, we can touch, we can see, we can taste, we can smell. It's a huge thing. We simply take these gifts for granted, but they are great privileges. We take it for granted. Everybody has it, so we have no value. When we are denied of something, then we realize what value it has. When a little toe of our foot gets hurt, then I realize, or one finger in my hand gets hurt, then I realize what wonderful role this finger has been playing so far. I never knew that. When something happens to any part of the body, then I realize how important that part is. How every cell is important in the body. How it's performing the right function. Thus, these five organs of perception are given. You have five organs of action. The sees, hands, legs, given. So these are great gifts given to us. Apart from that, we're also given an intellect, which is what we call Jnana Shakti, the power to know. Human intellect is a very great faculty. All other creatures also have an intellect to some extent. But they also know to some extent enough knowledge to conduct their life. The other creatures are only good for this Ahara, Nidra, Bhaya, Maitsuram. Ahara, eat the food to appease your hunger. Nidra, go to sleep when you are tired. Bhaya, protect yourself. Because there is a self-preservation instinct. Maitram, procreate. So these are the four natural instincts given to all creatures. A human being also has them. But then, so samanyamita pashavir narana ahar nidra bhaya maitram cha samanyamita pashavir narana. Ahara, nidra, bhaya, maithunam. Ahara, eating food. Nidra, sleeping. Bhaya, protecting myself. Maithunam, procreation. The gratification of sense organs. Samanyametat pashuvi narana. That is common to human being and all other creatures. This is common. So what is that distinguishes human being from other creatures? Dharmo hi tesham adhiko visheshah. Dharmena hi naha pasubhis samana. Dharmo hi tesham adhiko visheshah. For human beings, dharma is a visheshah. Dharma, a life lived on the basis of righteousness. So for human being, there is something right and wrong. For other creatures, there is nothing right, nothing wrong. Because all creatures, other than human beings, are all programmed to do what is right. They can never do anything wrong. As we said yesterday, a cow cannot make a mistake. It will eat what is right for it. Every creature will eat what is right. And there is no, you know, we like laddu. So even though my stomach can accommodate one, I may eat two or three. Rasgulla I love. So 5, 10, 15 rasgullas I may just consume. No creature will do that. You never find any other creature overeating. No, they don't do that. They don't get tempted by food in the sense that, you know, and so they're all programmed to eat what is right and in right quantity. Although when we have pets in our home, then we spoil them. And they fall sick. The pets can, but the street dogs don't fall sick generally, you know, because we spoil our pets. So we sometimes tell them, have you ever seen a depressed dog? See, depression, sadness is a human problem. There's no sadness anywhere else, or depression. And somebody says, Swami, my dog gets depressed. I say, how long have you lived, how long has the dog lived with you, you know? So maybe this dog also perhaps learned something from us and they may get depressed, all right. But otherwise, the street dogs, we never find them sad or depressed. Or sitting like that with a long face, no. They don't have the problem that human being has. And of course, they don't have the solution that human being also has. We are not jealous of dogs and cats. We are just saying, we are just, you know, as to how, what distinctions we are enjoying as compared to other creatures. That we have an intellect with which we can learn and grow. Important in life is to learn and grow. Human life is meant for learning and growing. Other creatures cannot learn, nor can they grow. They learn as much as required for ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitri. They know where to get their food, how to procreate, how to preserve themselves. That much they know, that much intellect they have, but nothing more than that. Human being has an intellect which has the jnana shakti, the power to know, power to learn and grow. We have a mind, we have an emotional faculty with which we experience feelings, with which we experience love, with which we express love and feelings. That is called a manas, that is called the mind. So intellect and mind. Mind is a faculty with which we feel, with which we desire. That's called Ichha Shakti. So Jnana Shakti, Ichha Shakti. Even power to desire is a big power. Only Vedanta always says, give up desires. Only Vedantic teachers say, give up desires. Desires was bondage. But Swami always points out, understand that desire also is a great privilege. Jokingly will say, a cow will tell a bullock, honey, shall we go for a movie tonight? A cow will never tell that, because that kind of desire is not there. But the woman or human being will tell another person, shall we go for a restaurant? Go for a movie? Desires. So, this is power to desire. Human beings' ambitions, the ambition, these are also a great gift. So, Ichcha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Ichcha Shakti, and also Kriya Shakti, the capacity to act in accordance with the desire. So from the knowledge we have desires, and from desires we have actions. That's how the sequence is. Understand that our desires are always within the limits of our knowledge. 100 years ago, nobody ever desired a laptop. Nobody knew what a laptop was. Today, maybe 100 years later, they will desire something that we have no idea today. Maybe they will start dwelling in moon, who knows? There may be shuttles going up and down. Why should anybody want to go to moon? I don't know. It's a miserable place. There's no atmosphere there. You know, it's a dark half day and half the moon is dark and half the moon. So why should you want to go there? I don't know. But still, people are in fact reserving real estate in moon. So the real estate agents, you know, are doing business. And so the colonies and things are planned in moon. And in Mars, why would you want? But anyway, whatever be the reason, it's amazing, human being has all kinds of ambitions. He wants to do something different, that's how. So, our desires are within the range of our knowledge. So, Jnana Shakti, Ichcha Shakti, and Kriya Shakti. All these Shaktis or powers is a special privilege of human being. Because no other creature has, they never perform what we call a deliberate action. The human being can perform a deliberate action. Actions they perform, but a premeditated action. A deliberate action is a privilege of a human being. We can plan our action. It can be deliberate action, can be good or bad, both ways of course. It can be premeditated murder also, or premeditated act of charity. So both ways, but then we are capable of performing the deliberate. We have kartrutva, the sense of doership. Kartrutva, sense of doership. Bhoktrutva, sense of enjoyership. This is all in human beings. All of these are great privileges, understand. And who has given all this? Ishvara has given all this. That's why he is a great giver. He is a Data. Our Swami always asks, so many things are given to us. The sun is given to us. The moon is given to us. The five elements are given to us. So there must be a giver. Ishvara is the Data or the giver. So this is how Ishvara is. Another important dimension of Ishvara is this. I said yesterday that essentially all other religions, all religions other than Vedanta, present Ishvara as the creator. Is what we call nimitta karanam, the intelligent cause or the efficient cause. Like a pot maker is the creator of a pot. So pot maker is called the intelligent cause or the efficient cause. Why is it called intelligent cause? Because the pot maker must have the intelligence and the knowledge and the skill of what a pot is and how to create the parts. That we discussed yesterday. How the creator must have the knowledge of what is to be created. However, a part maker alone cannot create a part. What is required? For creating a part, what is required? It requires potter's wheel. What does it require? It requires material, such as clay. Because poor, however, whatever knowledge he has, whatever knowledge mother has of making chapati, but she requires flour, isn't it? And she has to make a dough, then she has to roll, and then she has to bake. Without material, you cannot create. Otherwise, that would be so wonderful. If you could cook the food without the need of buying grocery, etc., that would solve all economic problems of the whole world, you know. But no. We cannot cook the food unless we have the material to cook. So cook also is required and material also is required. The pot maker also is required and clay also is required. Apart from clay, you may need also a potter's wheel and some other associated things may be required. But even without them, you can imagine, you know, sometimes they make chapatis, rolls, but some they can do it with hand also. But definitely, that flour or the dough will be required, for sure. So for creation, we require a minimum of two things, the maker and the material. The pot maker and clay is the material. So thus, all the religions present Ishvara as the maker or the creator of this universe, which is fine. He is the nimitta karanam, the efficient cause or the intelligent cause. But then nobody gives answer to this question, that Ishvara must have required a material from which he created the universe. Where did he get the material from? That nobody asks and nobody answers. When Ishvara, so our usual picture is that Brahma is sitting there, he is a huge, you know, lump of clay from which he keeps on making the form and we are thus made like this. So this woman asks her husband, so where were you? When Brahmaji was giving the intellects, where were you? She asked him. He said, I was getting married to her at that time, you know. So the usual concept is that Brahmaji takes the clay and then forms. But where does the clay come from? If somebody else gave that clay to Ishvara, then that somebody is even bigger than Ishvara, because if he does not give the material, where will Ishvara create from? For Ishvara to be Ishvara, for him to be ruler, for him to be supreme, he could not have been dependent upon anybody else. He has to be independent. In which case, he could not be dependent upon anybody else, even for the material. So even though in our day-to-day life, the maker and material are different, true. And thank God for that. That when you buy a pot, you don't have to bring the pot maker to your home, thank God. When you buy a shirt, a tailor doesn't have to be brought home. You buy ornaments, the goldsmith doesn't have to be brought home. Otherwise your house will be full of all kinds of fellows, you know. You don't have it. Because the creator is different from the creation. So they say, God in heavens. This is creation here, is up there someplace in the heaven, different from the creator, creation. Sitting there, you know, he pulls the strings and controls everything. So that's the idea. See, whether you will understand this or not, but technically let me tell you one thing. You can never totally control something that is different from you. You can never totally control something that is totally different from you. Even a cat, or a dog, or a child, or an ant, or anything that is different from you, you cannot totally control, because you cannot totally know what it is. You can know only one aspect of it, you can never know it in its totality. And that being the case, anything that is different from you cannot be controlled by you in its entirety. You follow what I'm saying? You can restrain the child, you know. You can restrain somebody, but not control. When you restrain somebody, that thing refuses to be restrained. They don't want to be restrained. Even a child, you want to punish the child, you hold him, he doesn't want to behave. He wants to, you know, get off. So anything that is different from you cannot be controlled by you. So even though you say that Ishvara sitting in the heaven controls this universe, he cannot. If this universe was different from Ishvara, then Ishvara cannot control. Please tell me, can a pot maker control the clay? Can a pot maker make idli from clay, tell me? Can he make idli? No. Can he make rasgulla from wheat flour? No. Not that I know of. Meaning that what you can do from that will be determined by that material and not by you, is it not so? You don't have the freedom to do what you want to do, you are restricted by what that thing allows you to do. Is it not so? So who is free? Are you free or that clay is free? Who enjoys freedom? Even a pot maker does not control the clay. He uses the clay, all right, cannot control. Thus the rule is, if there is something different from you, you cannot control it. Therefore, if this universe was totally different from God and God was different from the universe, he cannot control it. He can restrain, he can't control. Therefore, the universe cannot be separate from God. Meaning that the material cannot be separate from the maker as far as the universe is concerned. Although in our day-to-day life it is true that generally the maker and the material are different. So Upanishad gives a very deshi example. And deshi means very crude example. Mundukopanishad says, yathurnanabhi srujate grunate cha. Yatha uranabhi, a spider. Give the example of a spider. You know, spider creates a web. From there it gets a saliva. From the saliva, the spider creates a web. Is that right? Where does the spider get the saliva from? From its own navel. Na uranabhi. Gets saliva from its own self. Meaning that the spider is both the maker as well as provides the material from itself. An example. This example is just to find an exception to the rule. What's the rule? Rule is that the maker is always different from the material. That's the rule. No. So there is an exception. Look, the spider is both the maker as well as it provides the material. So there is no rule that the maker, the material has to be different from the maker. An interesting example. You know, very often we dream, is it not so? Sometimes in dream I give lectures like this. People are seated in front of me. At that time there is no space left here. In my dream, everything will be full. If you dream, then why don't you dream that way? But the point is, where did all the listeners and dream come? No invitation cards are required, no flyers are required, no emails are required. Where did all that come from? It all emerged from me, is it not so? And how long did the dream last? As long as I was sleeping. When I woke up, the whole dream world also was folded up into me, is it not so? The dream world emerged from me. The dream world existed as long as I was dreaming. And the dream world merged into me, is it not so? Emerged from me, sustained by me, merged into me. Is it not so? Because when I am giving lecture in the dream like this, when I wake up, do people continue to sit there? And waiting for the Swami, and the Swami has woken up, let him come to dream once again, then we can listen to him? No. All of you who form my dream world, all of you also wake up along with me. Not that I wake up and my dream world is waiting there, no. So dream is an interesting example. Where I am the maker of the dream world and I provide the material for the dream world also. So dream also is an example where the maker and the material are not different. This example. Similarly also Vedanta explains that the universe which is creation is not separate from Ishvara. Ishvara is both the maker as well as the material. In Vedanta, the maker is called the Nimitta Karanam, efficient cause or intelligent cause. The material is called what? Material cause is called, you remember? Upadana Karanam. Upadana means adana. When mother wants to make chapati, you know, she reaches out for what? For wheat flour. When she wants to make idli, she reaches out for what? For that batter. What you reach out is called upadana. So when a pot maker wants to make a pot, he reaches out for clay. That's the upadana karana. Similarly, the material is called the upadana karana. The maker is called the nimitta karana. Material cause and efficient cause. So Vedanta teaches that Ishvara is not only the nimitta karana, not only the maker or the creator, he is also the upadana karana. He is the material cause as well. So it's called avinna nimitta upadana karana. He is both the efficient as well as the material cause of the universe. Very important. You know the rule about the material cause? What is the relationship between the clay and the pot? What is the relationship between the clay and the pot? Where the pot is, there the clay is, right? Can there be a pot without the clay? Take away the clay from the pot, does something remain? Remain something? What will remain? See, what is pot? You take a lump of clay, you add into that name and form. What is pot? Clay plus name and form is called a pot, isn't it? So clay plus name and form is pot. So pot minus clay should be what? You see, A plus B is equal to C. So C minus A should be equal to what? A plus B is equal to C. So C minus A should be equal to what? be. Similarly, clay plus name and form is the pot. So pot minus clay should be what? See again, clay plus name and form is equal to pot. So pot minus clay should be equal to name and form. So take away the clay from the pot, does anything remain? Do the names and forms remain? You can pocket name and form. Doesn't remain. See, when it does not remain, was it there to begin with? The thing is, if name and form was some tangible entity, it would have remained. Is it not so? It does not remain. What does it mean? Now, anyway, we will not go into that Vedanta right now. But the thing is that, just while we are on the topic, just to bring to your attention that name and form does not have any substance in them. Only substance is clay. Name and form has no substance. When you lift that pot, the weight belongs to the clay, not to name and form. And when you smell the pot, smell belongs to clay, not to name and form. So what we call substance? Clay is the substance. The pot. So there is a substance corresponding to the word clay. There is a substance corresponding to the word clay. Is there a substance corresponding to the word pot? There is no substance. There is only concept, understand. Pot is more a concept in our mind rather than a tangible, substantial thing. It's just for your information. An important thing. That being the case, suppose there are 100 pots, what is substance in them? 100 pots may be there, 1,000 pots and pitchers and all kinds of the clay, you know, vessels may be there. What is one substance in them? Clay. Meaning that any number of names and forms do not create duality. I must have told you this thing in these events, you know, this episode in the life of Swamiji. Once Swamiji was giving lectures in Europe, and one jeweler, a very rich Indian jeweler, invited Pujya Swamiji of Bhiksha. After Bhiksha, now he wanted to give some Guru Dakshina. He was very generous. So he led Swamiji to his shop and then, you know, inside the room. And that room, inside the room, that inner room was open. As we switch on the light, the room started, you know, it was glittering. All golden ornaments were there, a heap of gold ornaments were there. So very generously, the jeweler says to Swami, Swami, please take one. Please take one. Swami says, give me gold. Please take one. Give me gold. So he picked up a bangle and gave it to Swami. I don't want bangle, I want gold. If one gold is given, is anything left there? What substance there? Gold is the only substance. Meaning that a number of ornaments also do not create duality in gold. Even though one name and form is different from the other name and form, but when it comes to the substance, there is no non-duality, there is non-duality. So you understand what is non-duality? What are all these here, you know, we are all here. What are we? All ornaments. What is an ornament? Gold plus name and form. What is gold? Material cause. Plus name and form. So what is a substance? Material cause is only substance. So we are all ornaments. You know what is the gold of which we are made? He said, who is the maker and the material? Ishvara. Ishvara is the maker as well as material. So what's the material of which we are made? Like clay is the material from which all pots and pans are made, so also Ishvara is the material of which we are all made, is it not so? So what distinguishes one pot from the other? The name and form, which is not a substance, which is only a notion. As far as substance is concerned, all the parts are one, is it not so? Similarly, as far as substance is concerned, we are all what? Are we many or one? There is manyness at one level. Which level? Name and form. Oneness at another level. What level? The level of substance. So understand what is meant by non-duality. The non-duality can be there only when Ishvara is not only the maker, but also the material. The non-duality can only be at the level of material. At the level of the substance, the parts can be one or non-dual. Not the level of the part maker. So Vedanta, you know Advaita Vedanta, you know Advaita Vedanta. Vedanta that teaches Advaita or non-duality. Where is non-duality? Not in name and form. Vedanta doesn't say that all parts are the same at name and form. It says, at the level of substance, they are all the same. So we are not the same at the level of name and form. The body is different, sense organs are different, mind is different, intellect is different. All different. That is what is called personality. It is also called a costume. You follow? Like an actor. There is an actor and when he plays a role, he wears a costume. So he may assume the role of a beggar, sometimes the role of a king, sometimes the role of a minister. So king is different, beggar is different, minister is different. He may be a villain also. You know, the same actor can be a villain, Khalanayaka. Whereas all those are different. What is the one thing in there? The actor is one. He is the one that unites them all. He is a thread that unites them all. The thread in which all of them are woven. Like here, we have this mala. Each flower is different from the other flower. But the thread passing through them all is one. So Lord Krishna says in the Gita, Mai Saramidam Prodam Sutre Mani Ganaiva. Lord Krishna says, Saramidam, all the universe of names and forms is all threaded into me. Just as the jewels or the pearls are threaded into one thread to form one garland or one necklace. So also, Lord Krishna, I am the very thread that connects or informs all names and forms. And therefore, so what we call this garland is a very harmonious, beautiful setup, isn't it? All the flowers, whoever's made this garland, nicely made. Look at the symmetry, you know. The flowers are all there. I just notice it now. Huh? Doesn't matter, Mogra, but this is symmetrical, colorful. When can this be? Only when there is a thread sustaining it. Remove the thread, the flowers will be scattered. You will not have a garland. You will not have a harmonious whole. So also, the universe is a harmonious whole. Something that, a thread that sustains the whole universe. That informs the whole universe. We are all connected. Although, the connection, you're not very evident to us, but we are all connected. Do you know that the whole universe is connected by the relationship of interdependence? The Upanishad beautifully points out how everything in the universe receives a favor from the rest of the universe and also favors the rest of the universe. Everything in the universe is related by the relationship of upakarya, upakaraka. Upakaraka, one who favors. Upakarya, one who is favored. So I am simultaneously favored as well as favoring. I am what I am because of the favor that the whole universe imparts to me. Without that, I cannot be what I am. I cannot hear these words unless the deity of the space is there. I cannot see unless the presiding deity of the eye, the sun, is there. For every faculty, there is a presiding deity whose blessing is required for that faculty to function. So constantly I enjoy the benefits of the grace or the favor of the whole universe. The earth sustains me. I can't sit here unless the earth sustains me. I can't survive unless I breathe the air. Is it not so? I cannot find my way unless I see. I cannot communicate with you unless the ears hear. I cannot communicate unless the speech talks. All the elements are constantly favoring me, blessing me. In turn, I also support or I also favor the whole universe. Or I should. The human being is an exception. The rest of the world follows this law. Because they're all programmed. Human being also is largely programmed, but not totally programmed. So this morning somebody was asking, Swamiji, prarabdha, ye purushartha, ye free will kitna hai? How much free will do we have? And how much destiny is there? Very difficult to say. Destiny means programmed and free will means the freedom. As far as the creation, other than human being is concerned, it is all programmed as best as we know. The whole universe, sentient and insentient universe, other than human being, is all programmed, doesn't have the freedom of choice and therefore it behaves in a programmed, predictable manner. So you can predict, as our Swami used to say, this man can predict how his dog will greet him when he returns home from the work. In the evening, when this man returns home, he is quite sure of how he will be greeted by his dog. As soon as he enters the home, the dog comes running, jumping up and down because he knows the master has come, going to give him biscuits, etc. So he's jumping up and greeting him. But he can never be sure as to how he'll be greeted by his wife. Because she has free will. Dog is programmed. She is not programmed. Wife or husband, what I'm saying is that the human being is unpredictable. Everything else is predictable. Because he's essentially programmed. Otherwise there will be no science. If this programmed universe was not there, science would not have been possible. You know, science is all based on perception and inference. We perceive something, from that we infer. All the laws of science are all inferences. Even that there is law of gravity is inference. Inference of different kinds. That is why it can change. Inference has certain elements in there, where there are certain invariable relationships, and you come to inference. Sometimes that invariable relationship may not apply, in which case our inference may not be right. So nowadays they say that the law of gravity, or there is no such thing as gravity. What it is nothing but the bending of the space. When there is a huge body such as earth, the space around the earth is bent because of the mass that the earth possesses. And therefore, the objects travel in a certain way, which we call gravity. Therefore, the gravity around different bodies is different. The gravity in the moon is 1/6 of that of earth because the mass is less. Gravity in heavier planets will be much more because the mass is more. Anyway, all I am saying is that all our information about science is derived from inference, the way it can change. If the rule of inference changes, our understanding will be changing. That's okay. All I am saying is that the whole universe, sentient and insentient, other than human beings, is all programmed. Human being also is largely programmed, you know, there are all these involuntary functions going on here, you know, and therefore, thank God that we don't have to make a choice of whether to breathe or not, because half of us will die. A lot of things just take place by themselves, thank God. But still we have a freedom of choice. That is called free will. And then rest is destiny. So what is programmed is destiny. How we respond to program is called free will. So some free will is there. And that little freedom that we have is enough for us to maneuver our life and reach our destination. Just as when we are driving our vehicle on the road, how much freedom do we have? Limited freedom. All kinds of rules are there. The speed limits are there. The traffic lights are there. And of course the traffic patrolman is there hiding someplace. If he is not there, then nobody will follow the rules, I tell you. But he is there. So people follow. So there are rules. You have some freedom, a limited freedom. You have the free will, you have the steering wheel, and you have the accelerator and the brake, and you have some freedom. Within the speed limit, on this right side of the road, not on the left side, etc., etc. You have to follow the rules. So also we have freedom, but then it is a limited freedom. Otherwise we'll destroy everything. If you are given limitless freedom, you have destroyed everything by now. Because freedom can be used and abused both. By using the free will, human being has really blessed the mankind. Human being has helped the mankind, blessed the mankind, and so we can't complain, but human being also can destroy. And both sides have been done. That human being is blessed, also is cursed. Use the free will properly, you bless. Abuse the free will, you curse. That being the case, we require guidelines. Because we are at a point where we can help ourselves or we can hurt ourselves. By making right choices, we can help ourselves. In that, we can grow into bigger and better people, happier people. By abuse of free will, we can create misery for our own self. By properly using the free will, we can create happiness for ourselves. So understand that it is we who are creating happiness for ourselves by using the free will in the right way, the righteous way, and we ourselves are creating misery for ourselves by abusing that free will. Meaning that whatever pain comes in our life today can be looked upon as the result of abuse of free will in the past. And whatever pleasure comes in our life can be attributed to the proper use of the free will. Therefore, we require guidance. Therefore, we are scripture. So, Ishvara has done everything for us. When freedom is given, we shall also have a guidance as to how to best use that freedom. So there should be a map. When you do travel, there should be a map. So our life is like a journey. And therefore, a map also is required. What's the map? The scriptures are the map. The Vedas are the map. The Upanishads are the maps. Bhagavad Gita is the map. The scriptures are the maps. What does the map do? Tells you what the destination is, and the same also what the road leading to the destination is. And so also a scripture like Bhagavad Gita tells us what the destination is and what is the road leading to that destination. Very important. Buffaloes don't require that. Cows don't require that. Because there is only one destination and one road. See, if there is one road, you don't need a map, right? Map is required when there are choices. When roads can take you to different destinations, then there is a map required. So that you can make right choices and reach your destination. By animals of one destination and one road program, therefore they don't require any scripture, they don't require any teaching, they live their life as they should live. But we have choices, therefore we require this guidance as to how to make the choice, how to use our free will properly. And from that, the scriptures are required. Who has given the scriptures? Ishvara. So he's a data, he's a giver, he's a teacher also. Yoga Shastra calls him the Paramaguru. Yoga Shastra calls him Paramaguru. So Yoga Shastra says, what is the Ishvara Pranidhanam? Performing action to please that Paramaguru. So Ishvara is Paramaguru, supreme teacher. He is supreme giver as well as a supreme teacher. Everything is given to us for us to only properly use, that's all. So this is Ishvara. And more we understand Ishvara, easier it will be for us to understand how to bring Ishvara in our life. Better we understand, easier it becomes. So we should understand Ishvara, which is what we discussed today is very important. He is both the maker as well as material. So we are all products of that material and maker. So just as I asked you one question, what is the relationship between clay and the pot? That where the pot is, there the clay is. The clay pervades the pot. There is no pot other than clay. All there is clay, right? Even though there can be a variety of pots and pans, in reality, all there is clay. Similarly also, if Ishvara is the material from which all the whole universe is made, then how many things are there? How many substances are there? Only one substance. That is the material. Who is that material? Ishvara. So what is that? Just as, in spite of many pots and pans, all there is one clay, so also, in spite of many names and forms, all there is one Ishvara. You understand? All there is one Ishvara. Ekameva. So it says, sadeva somya idamagrasit ekameva dvitiyam. This universe was one sat or Ishvara, one without a second. So Vedanta says, not only is one Ishvara, but all there is Ishvara. All there is Ishvara. So our Swami always is very fond of saying, not only worship Ishvara, not only worship one Ishvara, but for us, all there is Ishvara. That's a wonderful vision of Ishvara that our scriptures give us. That will make it easy for us to understand. He is already there in our life. How to bring him? There is nobody other than Ishvara. It's not a question of bringing him in our life. It's a matter of discovering how he pervades our life, you understand? It's not a matter of bringing Ishvara. If he's away from us, then you have to bring him. All that is he. He pervades the whole life, he pervades everything. Therefore, bringing Ishvara means seeing how he pervades our life, pervades every moment of our life. We'll see that tomorrow. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhyay Vavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.